Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, outstanding. Everyone had a good weekend.
Yeah.
First things first, so I'm playing catch up here. Have you sat me on this side of the stage, guys? Because I forgot my suit bag.
Wait, we got it wrong. Swap. That's better. No, we sat you there because you've won precisely zero contests. You've won how many cups?
One cup.
I am a double champion. There we go.
Well done, JD.
The very first appearance of an Egg Chasers team at a 7s or 10 competition, and we've won a trophy and a trifle bowl.
This last night, Tim Cocker, had two bottles of Prosecco in it. Living like kings. winning this is actually probably my most impressive rugby achievement ever.
And you did put in a fair amount of effort, I have to say, yesterday. I was very impressed by your effort. And a few of the other boys here as well put in some very impressive shifts.
Yeah. We had, yesterday, the most remarkable day. People were showing up. We didn't know who was going to show up. We didn't know some of the players, what they could do. And literally every time I was asking people, can you do something? Can you kick a ball? And this bloke showed up, Mark, just started smashing it everywhere. Absolutely everywhere.
Oh, this was...
Yes.
Is his surname Bolton?
Yes.
Did Mark Bolton tell you about... I don't know. Right, so one of the players on the Egg Chasers team yesterday was mates with my brother at school, and I knew him from Newbury Rugby Club, and he once came away on a week away where my parents and all their friends would book a house for February half term, and we were allowed to bring a mate each, and Mark Bolton, one of the Egg Chasers players yesterday, he turned up, and we were sort of snaffling drinks. We were only about 14, 15. We were snaffling the odd drink when the adults weren't looking, and the very first night, Mark Bolton, the player who was spraying the ball around all over the place yesterday, sprayed something else all over my parents' bed after he slept. After he sleptwalked from the bed he was in, and woke my parents up by peeing on him.
Yeah, but actually, after meeting him for 5 minutes, I can definitely see that. Definitely see how that would happen.
He's not matured.
Yeah, I'm good. Glad to hear. First things first. Apologies. I forgot my suit bag, so I'm not as well turned out as you, gents. I apologise. I've let the team down again.
The reason why you forgot your suit bag is phenomenal, but I don't think I can tell the story because it's just too cruel on the guy.
No, it's not cruel. It's because Greg Laidlaw wanted to party a bit more. I had a choice.
Yeah,
sure. More beers with Greg or go and get my suit bag.
Or be a double champion. I know what I'd choose.
Well, listen, we've got lots to talk about on this episode today, but the main one is the sight that we finally got to see yesterday. There were times when we wondered if it would ever happen, and we did get to see it to the delight of fans, rugby aficionados. We got to see Phil Largan playing rugby again.
First time, sorry, I definitely wasn't going to play, and then as it got nearer, I was warming up to the idea. I am definitely injured, as you could probably tell yesterday. I've not run since last November. But Captain Lee motivated me sufficiently.
What motivated, by the way?
Incredible organiser.
Motivator.
Listener. And all-round good guy.
Can we just congratulate North Dorset Rugby Club on outstanding weekend?
Yes.
What an event, guys.
I mean, I'm only piecing all the bits together by things that I'm hearing, but it sounds like a phenomenal weekend.
It's been an incredible weekend. The setup here is awesome. The teams and the organisation from the guys behind the scenes, from Jonathan and everyone else, has been amazing. 64 teams. Is that right? 64 teams? Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And some of them ran on time, didn't they?
I'll just kick us off with a little review that's been left. And it's from Dave John. And it says, so please leave a review wherever you get your podcast. Right, it says, my feed is full of rugby podcasts, but this is the one I constantly listen to week in and week out and have done since the early days. I think a big part of that is we're the only one that is there week in, week out, aren't we?
Being first is better than being talented, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's easier.
100%. Whilst other rugby pods rely on star power, this is a fan's take on rugby. You see, this is obviously a really old review because, you know,
JB was the star of the show yesterday, of course, as well.
Obviously.
Sevens and tens.
Sevens and tens.
Yeah, this is a fan's take on rugby, and it's like being with your mates in the clubhouse, chatting rugby over a few beers. And here we are at North Dorset Rugby Club. And then Dave John says, do I agree with everything they say? Absolutely not. Is every pod perfect? Absolutely not. But I can honestly say it's always been worth my time. Unlike other pods, it feels like these three do it for the love rather than to build themselves a media career.
Two of us.
Again, this is why we're sat separately over here. I've probably said this on the podcast before. I don't know, but that's 100% the reason I started was to build myself a media career. But it's actually quite good fun.
I quite like
your company, gents, so I've carried on. And the people that we get to meet, you guys across this weekend, and even in the bar that I was in yesterday watching the game, doing some work, several of our listeners came up and said that, to the point that Greg Laidlaw actually went, this is the wrong way around. There was more people coming up going, Tim, how you doing? They came out and asked Greg for pictures. Andy, who was on our, he says hello, he's from on the first tour to Bucharest. He was among the 100-odd people that came out to Bucharest. He was the one who won the Egg Chasers tie by doing the quiz.
Nice.
And John, who met you in Osaka.
Japanese John.
Yeah.
Yes.
Japanese John. What a guy.
Yeah.
He was out there as well.
Yeah, we met John at Twickenham and then Osaka and Okinawa with John.
And there's some substantial people that you met this weekend.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. And yeah. to put together a team, or two teams, the sevens and tens, with kind of everyone here who most people had not met each other before this weekend, it was awesome. It was great fun. The 2 days.
Genuinely, figuring out how to play sevens on the fly, with nothing but the advice of England captain Rob Vickerman, but nothing else other than that, and then somehow working out. It was honestly brilliant. And also, we've got a player called Hugo that scored 10 tries. And that Hugo did score 10 tries.
Yeah. Plan A.
Plan A.
And I've only been here this morning. I'm already desensitised to male nudity.
That's it, isn't it?
Which is great. That's what Sevens weekends are all about.
If you spend any time in a Sevens tournament or a Sevens festival, nudity becomes second nature. It doesn't. You don't even bat an eyelid. There were some scenes. On Friday night, we saw, I can only describe, like, a good-looking Sevens team. Do you know, like, they're all in their vests. They're all absolutely stacked.
Yeah, mid-20s, well-conditioned.
They're really boozing hard. I think they lasted 2 games after the Friday night before pulling out. Yeah.
So we might have found a new income stream as well, because I didn't realise there's prize money for Sevens and Tens tournaments.
Only for double champions, Tim. Only for double champions.
Well, there was another game going on, which I hope you've actually got to see.
Well. So the final of this illustrious bowl sevens actually coincided with the first half of the Lions game. So JB watched a little bit of the first half.
But I have seen it all since.
If you were going, well, but to be fair, if you were going to miss any of yesterday's game, the first half hour was a pretty good one to miss.
100%.
Yeah, I agree.
Which feels weird saying that because we've been waiting for this for so long. We were so excited. It was so tense. It was a great occasion, but it was a dire first half.
What was it though? Was it?
I mean, I think it was, yeah.
I quite respect what South Africa wanted to do, really. Because if you think about it, they are not a great attacking team, South Africa. And the thing which takes the longest thing to sort of get nailed down is your attack. So South Africa will be looking at the Lions thinking, well, they can't attack. We are not great. So why don't we turn this into a defensive arm wrestle? I actually think the tactics were not far off.
So I think it suits the limited training and time they've had together.
Yeah.
I mean, as an attacking team, they've got two of the best wingers in the world, Colby and Mathunke.
Their centres are all right.
And they've also got, they might not have been able to train as much, but 21 out of the 23 players started or played in the squad for the World Cup final.
The whole back line started the World Cup final.
So they have got that long-term cohesion. I think there was a little bit of the limiting risk factor. It was quite a smart strategy that definitely in the first half worked really well for South Africa. It was kick, chase, pressure, and particularly put pressure on the Lions' back three, and it worked tremendously in that first half.
I think it's fair to say South Africa know what they are, and they try to be as South Africans as they possibly can. I actually thought the first half, it's not what you want to see in terms of throwing the ball around. I quite enjoyed it.
So it was a great spectacle. If I'm wearing a Lions hat, which I very much was, and pretty much everyone here was, I did not enjoy that first half because it just felt like. But people were asking, how do the Lions change this up? Because they had no possession, they had no territory, they were under pressure from all of those repeated box kicks, and they were conceding penalties as a consequence. And it just thought this is not going to end. So other than perhaps putting Liam Williams on for Duane van der Merwe, you couldn't say the Lions could change anything because. There's nowhere to change in the pack, and you've not seen them play with the ball.
If you look through that bench and you think, right, where are we going to get the spark to, overturn this South African dominance? You'd be struggling.
Conor Murray? No.
Not really.
Farrell?
Faz.
Yeah, right. Faz, who came on and then deliberately injured Dan Bigger. I don't know if you saw that.
Hey, I've got a bit of Dean Ryan logic for you.
Oh, yeah, go on, please.
So Dean Ryan, who when he was at Oyena...
No.
When he was at Worcester, they beat Oyena, who beat Toulon, who had won the preceding
year's European Cup.
So,
yes, I think that was right.
The Lions beat South Africa. The Lions were beaten by South Africa A, so South Africa A are the best team in the world.
World champions.
Yeah, world champs. There you go.
I mean, so that South Africa A team was basically South Africa.
Yeah. Can I just say one of my favourite moments of the whole thing happened before kickoff, and it was the camera cutting to and lingering for a long time on Duane van der Merwe during the South African national anthem. And you could see he just glanced out of the corner of his eye. He knew he was on the big screen. Yeah. Poor fella.
Did you see the comments in the week that was Duane van der Merwe celebrated South Africa's win over England in the 2019 World Cup final, which probably... every Scotsman would have celebrated. it's hardly a shock. Hardly shock.
The one that would have
statement.
Been... Yeah, but more interesting than what Duane van der Merwe did during the World Cup final would have been Chris Harris. Was he a Scotland? No, he was a Scotland international by then.
He was a Scot because he played in the World Cup.
Oh, he played in the World Cup, of course.
But yeah, it's an interesting one because he's an English player, born and raised in Cumbria, Newcastle player, but then obviously now a Scotsman for... the country, but who would he have been supporting in that game? Certainly any Scottish, true Scots would have been supporting South Africa.
I'll tell you who was definitely South African was the TMO, who got a lot of talking points. We need to talk about this.
Right.
Before the game, Marius Jonker got announced, and everyone just went, really?
I hate this chat. I mean, what's the point in having professional officials if we think just because they were born in a certain country, they're now going to be horribly biased? It doesn't make any sense, particularly as you've got foreign nationals... reffing for different national associations. So, JP Doyle, I think he's Irish, but he gets to ref Ireland because...
Does he?
Yes, because he is an English referee.
Has he ever refereed Ireland? I'm not sure about
that. Well, I tell you who has ref their country.
Alan Rowland.
Oh, when was that?
He's certainly Irish-French, isn't he?
No, I was thinking of... what's the guy? The guy with the hair, with the tattoo.
With the tattoo.
Steve Walsh.
Yeah.
He who controls himself controls the game.
Yes.
So he says.
Well, so Marius Jonker actually had some massive decisions to make. And I remember I was thinking before the game, I just hope there isn't big decisions because either he's going to be given a load of stick by, or the World Rugby are going to get given a load of stick by Lions fans that are disappointed, or he's going to get a load of stick from South Africans for stitching up his home country, which I think... on balance is, well, so devil's advocate position, discuss, Lions definitely got the better of the big decisions.
I just think he called it, well, the Colby one was the one which I paid most attention to. I think he just got it right. I just think he called what he saw.
That was pretty clear cut.
Yeah, so there's three decisions in the second half. One was given as a try, which was the Faf try, and there was a potential knock-on from Peter Steph de Toy, and it might
he
have been Mpimpi.
He missed
but,
it.
Yeah, it was the correct decision.
Yeah.
There was the Diolande try, which the run-up was all fine, but the initial try to collect with Liam Williams and Colby, that was definitely a knock-on from Colby, so he got that correct. The one that was questionable was the Willie LaRue try, the kick through by, I think it was Am. Now, at the time, that looked in real time, that looked like he was offside. When you slowed it down, and we've got a few referees in the room here, so I might get some frowns or shaking of the head. Yeah. When you slowed it down, the player who kicked the ball was definitely behind Willy LaRue. But the ball, I think, was at least level or possibly slightly in front of Willy LaRue.
What was the infringement given for by Jonker? Was it for offside?
I think it was given as, yeah.
Because there was a possible forward pass from Diolande to Am.
Yeah, I think the pass was fine. It was a possible, I think the pass was fine. I think it was the kick that the decision was made on. And I think that, if I was a South African fan, I'd be saying, I think the ball was level with...
Because the referee's on-field decision was try.
Yes.
So it has to be conclusive to overturn an on-field decision.
Correct.
Marius Jonker, I think this is where you're saying, what does it matter? I think this is where it matters. Because I'm telling you, Marius Jonker could not have not had in his mind, uh-oh.
Yeah, if I give this against the Lions.
Because he overturned an on-field decision and it was not conclusive.
I just think that these guys are professionals. I just prefer to see the best.
I am happy with the decision.
Very happy with the decision.
Delighted with it.
Yeah. But yeah, those three incidents. Obviously, Lions won.
Oh, there was a tip tackle from Hamish Watson as well.
There was.
Yeah, why is that? That should have been a yellow. Obviously,
Let the voice play.
Well, no, he's obviously compensating for his lack of size. recklessly tips up a South African. Off. Yellow card.
Yeah,
that was an interesting one. But I was okay with that just being a penalty. Obviously, wearing my Lions glasses.
Maybe we can give Marius Jonker a bit of a... I mean, I'm happy with the decision, but maybe South Africans should cut him a bit of slack until their broadcasting quality gets into the 21st century.
Yeah.
Because the camera angles they've got and the lack of replays and stuff, it's been awful.
Or is it sort of French broadcast quality?
But it wouldn't have been on this one, would it?
Because the French have all the angles in the world.
Yeah, yeah. But
when they need them.
Yeah.
If you're doing a slow motion shot of Ntamack strutting around or Dupont strutting around, they've got incredible ultra high definition shots of that.
Every angle.
Every single angle. But if there's a possibility that there was a French infringement or someone has done something untoward, there is never, ever, ever an angle of that.
Goes missing.
So there's a lot of talk about changes for next week, and we'll get onto those. But I would say, one, cameraman, give us more angles and more replays. Cameraman, director, TMO, make it neutral, and the groundsman, sort yourself out. Because that pitch was getting carved up.
But it's going to be the same pitch, isn't it?
Or
it's certainly in Cape Town, because there are multiple stadiums.
No, I think it's all three in the same place.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you. What do you think you got wrong about your initial prediction, and compare that to how the game panned out?
I'll say straight away, I got a couple of things massively wrong. I was scared of the replacement South African front row. And I said, we've got to be ahead after 50 minutes because they're going to muddle
100%.
And actually... that's part of what turned it for the Lions.
They weren't great, were they?
Bringing on the replacement front row at half time.
Which was remarkable. Because there's two things in this. There's the decision to bring them on at half time, which is, it read to me like a pre-planned strategy that they were going to do that. Because the first half, South Africa were totally dominant. And their front row, the three guys they replaced, were a key cornerstone of that dominance. And they totally changed it at half-time. And it's great to look back with hindsight, but that seemed like a turn. It certainly felt like, and the scoreline dictates it as a turning point in the game. It should have been read the game, leave them another 5 minutes, another 10 minutes, and then change things up. But there's that angle. But also, I was a little bit concerned about perhaps the weakness or the inability of the Lions bench to change the game. And they all did it. They all added impetus and positivity, certainly more than their South African counterparts.
I was actually surprised how Gatlandy the whole performance was. So I was expecting them to come out and play a little bit like Scotland when they, start throwing it about and Finn Russell is controlling things, even though Finn Russell wasn't playing. And it wasn't like that at all. It was proper Gatland style, stay in the fight, and then eventually snatch it at the end. I did not see that coming for the life of me.
The other thing I got totally wrong at the time is when they got the penalty just at the start of the second half. I was like, what are you doing? Take the points!
Take the points!
And they backed themselves, went for it, and fair play. That's why I'm sat here and Alan Wynne-Jones is out there.
Exactly.
And that's why having Luke Cowan-Dickie is obviously key to that, because that is an Exeter way of playing. That is back yourself, go for the corner, and execute and do it. And they did.
Now who is the best? Who is the better player here? Is it Courtney Laws or is it Peter Stephan-Toye? Because those two were the two best players, I think, on either. Maybe Itoji.
Oh, Itoji was head and shoulders above everyone. And
For the Lions?
On the field, the guy's just ridiculous.
Peter Stephan-Toye is also ridiculous.
What was ridiculous about Mario Itoji? The guy's an absolute freak, but what he was doing yesterday that he wasn't doing, that he hasn't done for England sometimes, is he was just... Absolute. His decision making was on the money. You know those silly penalties he's been giving away.
Yeah,
in the Six Nations.
None of that. He was just on the money. You could see the cogs turning as he was on it.
Well, but he's always on the edge.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's one of those things. Like if you're on the edge and it all goes your way, you're going to be brilliant because well, you are. But occasionally there'll be a ref that just doesn't like what you're doing and you'll get pinged.
For a championship player, he's pretty decent.
Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah. I thought so. Maro got the man of the match.
Did he?
Yesterday. Yeah. I thought it could have been either Maro or Laws. I thought both of them were just outstanding. And Laws, like, his line-out work was exceptional. His running, which is not something you particularly think, but he was making metres, big carries, and big carries in open space. And then just his hits and his work around the breakdown.
So interesting, that's something they've worked on at Northampton under Boyd, which is trying to get into the wider channels. Although, having said that, I didn't see him in any wide channels.
But he
didn't make that great break in the second half.
He has said that when Eddie Jones took over at England, he said to him, work on your ball carrying.
Mm. I don't really know how you do that, though. I mean, you either are massive and can carry a ball, or
he is massive and can carry a ball.
How does he get more massive?
So one of the things certainly that I've noticed when he was younger was he was quite upright in contact. Being 6'7", it's probably more difficult to get a lower body position into contact.
Do you not think, on Itoji, do you not think yesterday there was sort of shades of McCaw in his prime when just everything he did just made huge moments and big impacts?
So I think there is something in that. Because when you compare it back to the Six Nations... for England, and the decisions were going against him, and some of it was he was making bad decisions, but some of it were 50-50 calls.
Oh, yeah, the cloak of invisibility.
This time I think there is a bit of that, yeah.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we can get away with things which other people can't because he's Mario. It must be legal because Mario's doing it.
Yeah.
So yesterday in the sevens, I've got a theory. I've got a theory.
Just before we carry on, let's just take in the moment. JB is talking about the elite level sport, and we're taking it back to the North Dorset Sevens.
Yeah.
Go on, Jay.
Our winger, Hugo, who got 10 tries. My theory is he scored one try when he ran really fast, and then after that, no one bothered chasing him because they thought he was fast. So it's kind of like the Maro thing. Like, oh, Hugo's got the ball, don't bother.
It must be really hard for Irish, Welsh and Scots, because I love the fact I get to support all these guys that usually we're cheering against. No, I do. I genuinely like it. I like the fact that Stuart Hogg's on the team I can cheer for. I do love Exeter as well. But if I was like Scottish, you get to cheer for Maro Itoji, but in the back of your mind, you're like, oh god,
they don't like it.
Got to hand him back in a few weeks because he's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Can I just change the subject quickly and just talk about the broadcast from Sky? Ronan O'Gara had the most Ronan O'Gara backdrop ever. Did you notice it?
No,
playing rugby.
Yeah, we didn't get much of the sound, so we didn't see. We saw the game, but not much of the stuff besides.
So Ronan O'Gara was sat at home, obviously, and he was in front of a wall planner, a massive wall planner, like calendar.
Yeah.
And it was completely empty. There's nothing in it. Nothing written in the wall planner.
So a bit upset I missed the broadcast yesterday because one of my favourite things is finding out what Will Greenwood's wearing. Was he wearing anything good?
Yeah, I couldn't tell if he was wearing chinos or tracksuit bottoms with his blazer. And I'm not one to talk today, but yeah,
absolutely.
Eclectic. And he's gone for it's like he's just started training for the Marines and just had all his hair shaved off. Is he all right? I just want to check it.
Someone's
checking, is he alright?
Someone's asking if he's okay twice in rapid succession.
JB, are you okay?
Are you okay?
No, but are you really okay?
Are you okay? So, what was the broadcast like?
Oh, it was good. I mean, obviously,
you can't say anything, can you?
Obviously, the talk sport coverage was outstanding. That's what I would be focused on. Yeah. The commentary from James Haskell with Ben Kay.
Absolutely. I mean, what time is the best talk sport show on?
Oh, it's on daily at 5 till 6.
Mm, very good.
Lions Daily, and in podcast form, wherever you get yours. Yeah.
Wherever you listen to the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, of course.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. A few other moments I absolutely loved. When Mako gave Cheslin Colby a helping hand up.
Yeah.
I didn't see this.
Great. I mean, just Colby got tackled into touch, and Mako, just like he was picking up a feather, just picked up Colby.
Yeah.
Up onto his feet. It was great.
Do you know who was playing a little bit, kind of like himself, but more so? I thought he kind of lost his head a bit. But Etzeba, he was very niggly yesterday.
First half, he was massive. He was great.
Yeah.
I mean, no, but he's massive generally, you know what I mean? But yeah.
But he was on the edge of giving away silly penalties, what I thought.
But it was, you contrast the first half and the second half. The first half, he was massive and disruptive. And then the second half, if you look at the Luke Cowan-Dickey try, the driving maul try, had that not have been a try, it could very easily have been a penalty try under the post and a yellow card for either Etzebeth or Mostert, who were both they'd come round the back, they're hanging off the back, just bringing the whole thing down.
This is wild.
They were very lucky that was a try.
What do you make of Tom Curry's performance yesterday?
Bit mixed.
Ooh, not great.
I thought he was all right. I thought he was all right. I've seen a lot of criticism of it, but By his standards, not great.
I think
you're right.
I think he was quite quiet, but also the stupid no arms, slightly late hit on Faf. That he got lucky with that. In a different case, with a tackle like that, if he makes any contact with Faf's head, it's a red card because you're going in with a no arm tackle after the ball's gone. It's just a stupid, needless thing to do. But yeah, it wasn't the best game by his incredible high standards.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and there's a few besides Marrow and Laws. I thought Ty Furlong was incredible. Mm-hmm. I thought Conan had a really good game when he got opportunities in the wide channels, which is what he's obviously there to do. He was really, really good.
Henshaw looked decent.
Henshaw, couple of mistakes. The break was great, but then he loses it in the tackle to LaRue.
I'd forgotten about that one, yeah.
Daly, obviously massively shaken by that Lucano Am hit, which was an awesome, awesome hit. But there wasn't a huge amount of incredible performances by the Lions.
I think you've already highlighted it. The replacements, so Ken Owens and Mako Vunipola and Carl Sinclair when they came on, were all great.
Yeah. Yeah, they were all great.
Really encouraging.
Hogg did very well. Duan's one for me. I wouldn't have started Duan. And you saw in that game the promise and power and ability he has going forward, only on a couple of occasions.
He handed off Etzebeth a couple of times.
Yeah, but you also saw the weaknesses under the high ball, and I think people targeted him a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can get on to what we would change for next week in a minute.
Yeah.
But I don't know, does anyone remember JB's game that he invented years ago? The most talked about game that we've ever had on the podcast.
It got us nominated for a
UK radio podcasting award
based on the strength of this.
Based on the strength of this, Springbok versus Nazi war criminal.
We get two people to play Springbok.
I've got another round. I think we should get two people to play, and we've been kindly gifted by one of our friends who used to work for World Rugby, a Rugby World Cup Sevens, as we're at a Sevens tournament, a Rugby World Cup Sevens ball signed by the captains of all the teams that were in it in San Francisco in 2018. Just get that little dead thing off it. So two volunteers want to come up and play Springbok versus Nazi war criminal for a ball. Yeah, come on. Any two, get yourself up here.
Hugh goes up. Anyone else? Anyone at the back? Dave?
Come on, Dave.
Dave Mack will love this.
JB and Phil, if you just hold your thing so you can...
Yeah, roger that.
Yeah.
Come on, up. Get up. Get up.
Come up.
Shirt off. You loved it, didn't you? Do you remember Dave from Madrid? I beat him 3 times at Pint Racing.
I remember Dave from Madrid. I don't remember that.
You remember me beating him 3 times at Pint Racing?
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Staggering himself. Well played. Ooh, right.
Language.
Right. If you stand next, when he stands next to Phil, when he stands next to JB. So, first player, Wilhelm Bruch. Wilhelm Bruch. Was Wilhelm Bruch part of Razzie's bomb squad or part of Adolf's bomb squad?
Adolf's bomb squad on that one. Adolf.
Razzie.
Okay, so Hugo's going for
Nazi war.
Nazi war criminal and Dave?
Dave.
Dave's going for Springbok. Hugo 1-0.
Yes.
Nazi. Obviously.
Is there anything he can't do?
Next one. Heinrich Boer. Heinrich Boer. Was Heinrich Boer a proponent of the Blitz attack or the Blitz defence?
Dave, you go
Dave,
first.
Dave, you first.
Blitz D.
Blitz defence.
I was going to say that as well. Can I go for that?
Yeah, you can go for Springbok. Yeah. You're both going for Springbok. You're both wrong.
Oh.
Nazi again. Saw action on the Eastern Front. Next one. Tom Van Vollenhaven. Tom Van Vollenhaven. Does Tom Van Vollenhaven have nightmares thinking about D-Day or sweet dreams thinking about Damien D'Allande? Hugo.
Sweet dreams.
Hugo, you're going for Springbok.
Springbok, yeah.
What about you, Dave?
Nazi war criminal.
Hugo, 2-0.
Oh.
Springbok, get this. Tom Van Vollenhaven, Springbok, 7 caps for South Africa before switching codes and moving to the UK to play for St Helens, where he scored 392 tries in 408 appearances, and in 2000 was inducted into the Rugby League Hall of Fame.
Wow.
408 appearances.
Wow.
Almost Hugo levels of try scoring. So two to go. Hugo's 2-0 up. You first, Dave, on this one. Wolfgang Otto. Was Wolfgang Otto part of the most evil empire ever? Or...
was he a Nazi?
Dave.
Definitely a Nazi.
Yeah, I'll go for that as well. Am I allowed to?
Yeah. You can do what you want.
You can do what you want. You're both correct.
Ooh.
They were both... Wolfgang Otto was part of the most evil empire ever. He was a Nazi. And final one, Sid Demelke. Sid Demelke, did he get his wings with the Luftwaffe or play on the wing for the Bocker?
Plays on the wing for the Bocker.
Nazi.
Okay, it's a 3-0 whitewash for Hugo. Get this, though. Sid Demelke, 2 caps for the Springboks between 1903 and 1906. Was married to Daisy Demelke, who was a notorious serial killer.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
What?
She killed her 2 previous husbands by poisoning them.
Wow. And he went in for more.
Sid was all right.
Wow.
I know. thank you very much. And, he's got all the tries, he's got all the glory, and now he's got himself a Rugby World Cup ball. Nice one. Good stuff. Nice one, Dave. Nice one, Hugo.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Just in doing the research for that, I did. I was looking back at old.
Is this why my YouTube algorithm is full of Nazis now?
maybe. It makes up for the fact that I've got to put up with. I now get my. Because we share it, we've got the same YouTube channel. I now have to watch. Actually, one thing I've noticed is. It keeps suggesting a lot of women's CrossFit videos.
I like watching women lift. I like watching more lift.
No, in doing the research for that, I was looking at former Lions tours to South Africa, and there's some phenomenal people that used to play rugby. Well, there's phenomenal people that play rugby now, but rugby in particular, there's just some amazing people.
In the amateur era.
Peter Kidner Stagg was a Scottish international. He's 79, still alive, played for Sale.
Did he?
Yeah. Mm. 28 caps for Scotland, 3 for the British and Irish Lions, 6'10" lock. Son of Sir James Stagg, who was the senior meteorologist for Operation Overlord, for the D-Day landings in Normandy. And he played for, and I had no idea about this, there's a rugby team that play called the Anti-Assassins. Mm. Have you heard about these, Phil?
Yeah.
You guys know about this?
Yeah. So the Northwest, but I don't know what the name is about. I don't know much about them, really.
Well, I know their motto. They're a charity team. It sounds like they just have a good old knees up. Their motto is Semper Mores Boni, which means good behaviour always. No. I just reckon you know they're good on the beers.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And Stuart Lancaster has played for him, and Ian McGeachan, and Mark Eller.
And Ronan O'Brien from Broughton Park.
Well, we need to look into this. We need to look into...
So just whilst we're on Forces stuff, two things. So we were joined yesterday by future Jamaican Sevens greats as a notional Sevens coach, Jamal Ford Robinson.
That was cool.
That was very cool, yeah.
Yeah.
So Jamal came down...
It's not cool that most people didn't know who he was, by the way.
Yeah. Actually, that's a great, great point. People were asking, so do you play rugby still? And then one person said, what, do you play centre or back row? Said, I'm a tight prop. But yeah. He wasn't as recognised as I expected.
England A tighted prop as well.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Actually, not England A. Oh, hang on. No, he was on the bench for the Argentina test last time, to proper England.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's got a...
A full cap.
I was going to say a full match fee, because that's more important.
very much more important.
So the reason that I bring that up is because Gloucester, in their training this year, have separated all of their players out into 4 different groups. And each of these groups is an ex-Gloucester player, but is also a veteran. And then on Monday, they have to go in and deliver a presentation on the guy who their group is named after.
Ah, okay, so they're kind of learning and disseminating the history of the club
exactly, and people who previously played at Gloucester. And the other thing, so when we were trying to build the Sevens team, as Captain Lee will tell you, difficult. We would get 3, and then we'd lose 2, and then we'd get another 2, we'd lose 1, and then we'd lose 4 and find 5. It was just an absolute nightmare. And the RAF nearly helped us out. They sent us 3 guys, and they all flaked. The RAF flaked. And you know who... then picked up the slack and then played for our Sevens and our Tens? 35-year-old Royal Marine. So that's why we've got a Royal Navy top here.
So we're gonna until they redeem themselves, we're taking down the Air Force jersey in the dungeon and putting up a Royal Navy one.
Burn it. Burn it. Done with them. Yeah. Matt Warwick, what a guy. What a guy.
What a player as well. Yeah. Yeah. Some engine on the boy.
What is he right here? 6'3"?
Yeah, about that.
6'3", 35 years old, an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
An absolute nightmare. You would not want to be anywhere near him with a rugby ball.
Incredible engine, incredible work ethic. handsome as well. Yeah,
handsome, wasn't he?
And charming.
Do you know, he reminded me of a really handsome version of Sea Gypsy. which is one of our players.
Incredible performance from Ben on the wing yesterday. Bagging four tries.
I think Ben didn't tell us he was coming, did he? No, he just showed up. So remember Ben from London, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we've got a group, we're asking for players, and he never puts a thing forward. He just showed up in his camper van with boots in the bag. amazing stuff. And then scored 2 tries.
Four tries.
God, I got 6. Shit.
So, next week then, let's turn our attention forward a week and the second test. And I don't know, do you remember the Ian McGeachan speech? I can't remember, is it the 97 Living with Lions documentary where they win and he gives the talk to the team and says... A wounded animal is just fights for every last breath, and that's when they're at their most dangerous, when they're wounded, and we've wounded the Springboks, but they're going to come back with a frenzy, and we've got to take them by the jugular and just kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the Lions can and will be thinking exactly the same way.
Yeah,
they can end this series next week.
You can't let it go to three tests.
No,
you've got to do it next week. But it will not be easy because South Africa, one of the things that they've struggled in both the A game and this game was match fitness. Evidently, they've now got more matches under their belts. They will improve that, and they will have learned a little bit around the strategy of replacements as well.
This is just popping to my head. Do you think the team selection of the slightly smaller, more athletic boys was actually in relation to match fitness?
Well,
you say that,
yeah. which small, apart from Quagga-Smith,
Quagga-Smith's an obvious one.
Who didn't have a great game.
Mostart's not a big man.
Well, he is a big man. He's not as big as Lude.
He's not a big man.
But the front row, whilst they're smaller, were more effective.
Yeah, but I wonder if that was a fitness thing. I wonder if they were more, because, Kitsoff's massive, and he needs to be in shape at the top of his game to be playing.
Certainly, definitely the decision around Malherb, I think it was for that reason. Yeah, because he started the World Cup final. He certainly was, for a long period of time, the cornerstone of that pack, the starting tight head.
But, I mean, I'm not saying that's the thing.
But fitness wasn't the reason that Mako did a job on him.
No.
Mako did a job because he's a very, very good prop. I'm just wondering if that was... So I thought that Springboks would come out with their biggest, most enormous pack, and they didn't. They came out with something very big.
So would you just go massive next week, as big as you possibly can?
Depends on how they're training, how fit they are, all those sort of things.
Well, this is part of the problem. I don't think they can change too much, because who have they got that's match fit? If you're saying match fitness is an issue, they've been limited with games. They haven't. Well, there's not many players that you can bring in.
There must be an element of they're very happy with the guys because they've retained them and they've let go a lot of other very good guys who are match fit. There's no two ways about it. Like the Dupree twins, for instance, are fit and they're no longer about. Kunistu Hazen is fit and he's been sent back to Sale too. So they must obviously be, they are clearly fit enough to play. So I don't know.
Jasper Visa for Quagga-Smith. I don't know if they might make a change there.
Possibly.
Possible.
Yeah. The Marlon, there was always talk of him potentially making the third test, wasn't there?
Yes.
But I mean, it's only a week apart, the second and third test. So if he's fit, they might look to get him back in, both for the size element, because he's listed as about 22 kilos heavier than Quagga-Smith. I don't think that's quite right. But
It could possibly be.
But as well as the size, there's a leadership aspect. And you saw from the Lions, and I don't know if this was coming directly from Alan Wynne-Jones, but the team... right across the board, there was an element certainly in that first half of don't panic. We are getting pace at the moment, but kind of almost trust the system type thing. It's got to come from the leadership, and someone like Dwayne Vermaelen, who's been there and done it, can bring that kind of attitude.
Yeah, I don't know how South Africa look at it. They look at maybe they just go back and look at the first half and go, we were doing everything we needed to do more of that. Or as you pointed out, they've got absolutely electric backs who did absolutely nothing except kick chase.
Yeah, they were not getting ball in hand except for kick chasing. But then, you look at the game again and you look at those two disallowed tries and you say, they are incredibly fine margins. If one of those goes to hand or Willy the Roux is half an inch backwards or it's a slightly different TMO, Lions could have won by 10 points. Sorry, South Africa could have won by 10 points with the finest of margins. So maybe they don't need to change anything, but maybe there is just a little bit around the utilisation of the bench at the right time rather than the pre-planned time.
Yeah, and the bench and the match fitness discussions, I think you can bear that out. I think a stat I heard yesterday, it's something like it's been 4 years since South Africa last lost the second half. And that was...
Wow.
That was to England 6-3. So... They usually get stronger as games go on, as we saw in the World Cup final, for example, when they absorbed all the pressure and then just...
It was 19-5 in the second half, wasn't it? It was. But it could have been with those two tries, it could have been 19-all in the second half.
That World Cup final would have been the last game they played. So this is the first game they played since the World Cup final.
Yeah, and by the way, you've had the chance to parade two trophies in front of the players that you won it with, the Trifle Bowl and the trophy. They haven't had a chance to well, take their World Cup winning trophy in front of their fans. That was only something that really dawned on me yesterday.
Yeah,
as well.
So just on that, okay, so their World Cup win, obviously that 6-year figure sounds very impressive. You think, actually, they've not played for 2 years. But on the fitness, that, interestingly, was under Alad Walters.
Who's now at Leicester.
Yeah, he's now at Leicester and is actually renowned as a great conditioning coach.
By the way, the Air Force offended and scrambling...
Got no idea.
scrambling the chopper. Come and get us.
Yeah, so South Africa, I don't think they'll change that much. I think they'll keep it broadly similar. I think Vermaelen, if he's fit, they will bring him in.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, I don't think they'll change much in terms of personnel. They might be, and I have seen some calls in the South African press today for like actually using the backs a bit more, getting Mapimpi and Colby with ball in hand rather than...
This is what we get with Phil. Phil looks at the South African press as well. That's the prep he does, even when he's hanging.
Well, I glanced over a few headlines. Don't ask me for any in-depth analysis of it, of the writing. So yeah, maybe, but perhaps not. The more interesting thing is what do the Lions do differently?
Yeah, and this seems counterintuitive after a great win. I think Warren Gatland will make several changes.
Because I think he will as well. There's one obvious one for me, but I would have done it before, and that's I would have had. I will have
any changes, any suggestions?
Yeah,
Liam Williams.
That would be my 100%. That would be my first one
for Ian Dew.
Yes.
Yeah. For, mainly because away. If South Africa, I don't think South Africa can are going to change. So if that's what they're going to do, get Liam Williams for the kick returns and the aerial.
Yes.
Yeah. Bigger is one to watch.
Yeah, and Bigger's had a few HIAs recently as well. This season in the run-up to the Lions.
I'm an enormous Dan Bigger fan. I thought Farrell looked like a fly-half to beat South Africa. I don't know why. I just think in that test he looked very, very, very assured. I wouldn't be adverse to swapping those two.
Yeah, I mean...
Let's just let that hang in the air for a moment. A compliment for Owen Farrell.
He's that determined he gave Dan Bigger the HIA. You know? There's something to be said for that kind of determination.
You respect that?
I do respect that, in a way.
So I would keep Bigger to start. I would maybe look at changing up the centres a little bit and maybe putting Farrell at 12.
Yeah, he's got a choice there. I think he may make a change in the centre.
I do like Farrell at 12.
Yeah.
Because he could bring Chris Harrison out at 13.
Possibly. Yeah, I think that might change. I think another one that could do might change the nines round. So Ali Price.
Conor Murray did look good when he came on, didn't he?
And Conor Murray calmed things down a little bit.
Yeah,
and Ali Price didn't, in a game like that, he didn't get to showcase like his running ability, which is why he's there.
So I get that. I just don't think I see why Ali Price is playing, because he's the best scrum half on tour.
Yeah, he's definitely had the best form. He's
100%. He deserves his shots. But, you know, as a guy who moves the ball quickly, as a guy who does the running, Gareth Davis has to be your guy.
I know.
If that's what you want.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something. He's hardly played any minutes.
No. It's not like Gatland doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting one.
Any changes in the forwards? No.
Well, Sutherland?
Wyn Jones could be fit again. I think Loosehead Prop will change.
Yeah.
I think... Sutherland didn't do anything majorly wrong, but I just think Mako was that good when he came on, and Wyn Jones will be back in.
You're not tempted to call it Marcus Smith yet?
No, if we're 2-0 up going into the third test.
Oh, I'm Marcus Smith.
Let the boys play. If we're 2-0 up, then you want to start Gareth Davis, Finn Russell, and Marcus Smith at 12.
Yeah,
there you go.
Now you're talking.
Sam Simmons at 13.
So on Marcus Smith. Who is Neil Francis?
Oh, yeah. Yep. So the Irish Independent, which is very, very different from the Independent in the UK.
Is it?
The Irish Independent's more like a bit more Daily Maily.
Okay.
They'll sort of go for the odd little shop story. They'll go for a bit of controversy. And Neil Francis, cantankerous, deliberately argumentative, likes ruffling feathers.
I don't know if this is fair.
I don't know anyone like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this is fair. I've heard he's the Irish Stephen Jones.
That's probably a good
shout. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've never heard his stuff.
And he made a comment on a podcast.
Uh-oh. It's nice that people listen.
Oompa Loompa.
Tam.
Yeah. He's you kind of criticised him for his floppy hair and then Oompa Loompa tan.
I mean, I could say, for example, that's an Oompa Loompa coloured jacket you got on, JB.
Well, you'd be wrong.
I would be wrong. But no, ridiculous. And so he's lost his job.
Yeah, so first thing on this is, well, his analysis of Marcus Smith is wrong. It's wrong on many levels. Number one, he's describing Gavin Henson. I'm not saying that's a joke. He actually is. So he's like, a Harlequins fly half is the first criticism of him. As if playing for Harlequins has some sort of quality in itself. I think he's thinking of Mark Smith as some sort of pure flair player, some like a Finn Russell type thing. He mustn't have watched him, because Mark Smith can do all that stuff. And then a lot more.
Yeah.
A lot more.
And it's actually... people will often, because Marcus Smith can do all of the flair stuff, they often assume that that's all he has and he's like erratic at kicking or makes bad decisions or can be a bit flaky. And actually, Marcus Smith is none of those things. He has the flair in his locker, but he has the all-rounder. He can do absolutely everything. And he's kicking in this season, particularly for Quins and in the run-up to the final and in the final, was absolutely outstanding, metronomic. Like Bigger-esque or Halfpenny-esque in their absolute... pomp.
It'd be better to describe as like Owen Farrell that can do things that Finn Russell does.
If you had the love child of Owen Farrell and Finn Russell,
yeah.
It would be kind of how you'd describe him.
But here's the thing which I don't get, right? So there's the racism angle to this, the Oompa Loompa tan. Okay, someone needs to be held accountable for that, perhaps. But it's the idea, and I've seen this across a few outlets now, that because that podcast was recorded, they shouldn't have broadcast that... that phrase, they should have edited it out. So on the one hand, they want accountability for this thing, but on the other hand, they actually want people to edit this out. So presumably, Neil Francis would have got away with that because his mate Luke Fitzgerald cut out the clip.
Also, well, that throws the responsibility onto probably some 21-year-old low-paid person who's just... recording it and take it, and while these guys chunter away in a room and then go, right, see you later, do the hard work, get that up.
Yeah, it's the most bizarre thinking, because if a journalist had someone on the record and they said exactly that about Marcus Smith, you'd guarantee that they'd write it in the paper. So the idea that you'd edit it out of a podcast because, why, he's your, he's your mate, I don't understand it.
But there could be another angle, which is if this is an incident that is worthy of him being fired, then you can always edit it out, not put it out on the podcast, and then do the disciplinary proceedings behind the scenes.
At least then, it would be being fired for what you do and the actions, not fired for the reaction.
Yes.
That's like me interviewing someone and them saying something a little bit edgy. I cut out that clip and then post it to their employer. Because like the left-wing podcast isn't, on the left-wing, isn't? It's Luke Fitzgerald's...
Naming no names, have you ever cut out... said. You have.
Yeah, but wouldn't players have asked me to? Because I'm not in it to get them in trouble, but they're not there with it. They're not there for their opinions, or are they? The deal is that I don't get them in trouble, or I'll get rid of stuff which I think will get them in trouble.
So you've actually sort of said.
Yeah. Do you want to say that?
Shall I take that out? Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. I had a player who was criticising the medical staff of a club quite heavily, and then I was like, you don't want that.
Yeah.
Right, so get rid of that.
Yeah.
So, that player isn't there as a journalist, as a professional journalist of, like, say, 30 years. And if you're the...
Who understands that when you hit record on something...
Yeah. And he's there for his opinion. No, he's just, so I think it's a different scenario.
That just reminds me, actually. I remember once... So one of the first sort of reporting type gigs I had is I used to go to the Old Trafford training ground in Carrington. The Manchester United training ground in Carrington do a little one-on-one five-minute thing with Alex Ferguson.
Awesome.
Every Friday before we went to the press thing. And it was just after the time that Kevin Keegan had done the I love it if we beat them, love it.
Yeah.
It was just after that.
How long ago was that?
Mid-90s?
No, it wasn't that.
Was Kevin Keegan reappointed?
No, it wasn't that. It was Kevin Keegan had just come back.
Yes.
Okay.
So he'd just come back and Fergie was going to be playing Kevin Keegan for the first time in years.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I clearly sort of hit record, did the chat, asked about the Keegan rivalry stuff, hit stop, clearly hit stop. Thanks very much, Sir Alex. Oh, I bet you'll love it if you beat them, won't you? Love it. And he didn't clock that I'd stopped recording. And if I'd got him to sort of laugh and joke about that and or say it, that could have gone. That could have been the whole build up for the whole game.
It could have been very different, couldn't it?
It could have been like, imagine if the tabloids had got Sir Alex Ferguson joking about the we'll love it if we beat them ahead of their first matchup again. So, understandably, he's like such a soft, he's such a soft bloke, or he was, you know, in those times. As soon as you hit record, boom, different person.
Really?
Yeah, so he obviously didn't know that I'd hit stop, and he said to me, get out.
Did he?
Yeah. He went, get out and don't come back.
Wow.
And then he walked to his car.
Why did he tell him to get out?
Because he thought I was trying to trap him and get a...
Yeah, like, try to get some clickbait.
Trying to get a bit of clickbait.
Ah.
Trying to get him to say something that would become the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And would not put him in a good light. And he said, get out, don't come back.
And have you been back?
I was back the next week, but...
Steve Diamond used to say that to me like, on a weekly basis.
So I walked after him. I followed him and said, Sir Alex, I'd stopped and it was I was just joking. I'm sorry, misjudgment on my part. Get out.
Oh, wow.
Don't come back. So anyway, I called up his sort of PA in the week, and she said, oh, don't worry, just come back. And when I came back the next week and said, before I start, I just want to apologize. Get on with it, boy. That was it.
Wow.
But yeah, people can be... So the point, I guess that was a long way of saying that these people that understand what a red button means when you hit record.
Yeah.
As he does.
Exactly.
Yeah. I should have nowhere to hide.
It's a funny one, isn't it? The Irish Independent obviously employ this guy to be a bit of a dickhead.
To rile people up a bit.
Oh, hang on, you've crossed the line here.
Yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah, but it does show that he's never watched Marcus Smith, or certainly doesn't understand how he plays. If he's trying to pose him as all about the flair and not able to do the other side of things as well.
That is exactly my biggest takeaway too. He clearly doesn't know a single thing about English rugby.
One of the little story that I saw: John Mitchell Eddie Jones has lost another coach.
Yeah, now this is interesting.
John Mitchell is gone.
So John Mitchell goes to Wasps, not as the top man, so working Lee Blackett's team.
It's not that he's been let go, he's chosen to leave the England setup to go to be a coaching team at Wasps.
Presumably he's replacing Ian Costello. How is that his name?
Well, Ian Costello is the defence coach.
Yes, he's replacing him.
And you've got, there was talk about the...
Doesn't matter. No, so Costello's gone.
Ed Robinson.
No, not Ed Robinson. The attack coach, Martin Gleeson, there was talk about him going to England.
So, no, I'm sure Costello's gone to Munster or somewhere like that.
Yeah, okay.
So that'll be a direct replacement for him. Where's Ed Robinson gone?
I thought he was going to Wasps to do skills coaching.
Skills coach. Anyway, it's just another another coach leaving the England's coaching team.
And it's the one coach who's actually been the consistent there for Eddie for pretty much all of his tenure. And it seemed like a weird appointment initially, and it worked at least to some extent from my perspective.
So
it did.
As I understand it, the England coaching philosophy, or Eddie's coaching philosophy, he does do some coaching, but he likes to always have a different angle or a different person in camp to challenge the lads. And if you look at some of his coaching appointments of late, they're absolutely wild. So, Ed Robinson would be one.
At 27, I mean, coaching at Jersey. Yeah.
I mean, they're not wild. I guess they're more, they're all over the place. they're not exactly mad appointments, because like Jason Ryles is obviously a great coach.
But
actually showed up.
It's all right. It's just whatever the coaching team is, it's just placeholder until Gatland.
Exactly. Yeah. Then there is, what's his name? The guy we just talk about then.
John Mitchell.
John Mitchell himself.
Amor.
Amor.
Wise Mantle.
That is a crazy selection.
Hatley.
Yeah. Well, at least Hatley's got a really good really good CV. But yeah, I mean, if you look at all of the coaches that England have brought in of late, since Eddie started, they're all completely different. There's no common theme.
Well, go on, Phil.
I was going to say one of the most recent ones, and obvious, like it is a very obvious choice, was Proudfoot. After South Africa dismantled England's scrum in the World Cup final, employ the bloke who taught South Africa to dismantle England's scrum in the World Cup final.
And by the way, Sinclair and Mako, I know they were there, and they'll be there for the Lions. In fact, five of the pack were English at one point early in that second half.
But you're still supporting the Scottish just as hard, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And as much as they were there playing for the Lions, there must have been a little bit in the back of their mind when they were winning those scrums and line-up more going, that's for 2019, have that.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. Undoubtedly.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. It was great. So just one final thing then. You were talking about coaches and stuff. If Gatland does manage to come away with another victory over the next two games, where will he rank in the all-time coaches?
I think he's already top one or two.
Yeah, he's got to be. He's got to be right up there because of what he's done. I think he is already considered, certainly in Europe, the Northern Hemisphere, as one of the all-time greatest coaches. I think the opinion in New Zealand is probably not quite the same for a couple of reasons. One, he's been doing it with Wales and the Lions, which is one thing. But then also 2 years ago, or last year, when he was Super Rugby Aotearoa with the Chiefs, he lost 8 from 8. He was totally, totally unsuccessful.
I think the New Zealanders quite like him being bad in their eyes.
Yes.
I think they really enjoy it. I think that Gatland is the master of pragmatic rugby. That's what I think. He looks at the game and he just thinks, he reduces it to what works. And then you've got all of these other geniuses in the world of rugby, and they are trying to reinvent the wheel, and they're trying to have different skills, and they're talking about all sorts of
skills, nonsense skills,
weird stuff. And it's like, no, big men getting over the game line time and time again. Things that don't be best are the things that require zero skill, and they go and win. And that's what rugby is. It's dead simple.
But either way, whether hopefully Gatland is successful, but whether he is or not, in 2 years' time, after the next World Cup, it's like a fresh coaching cycle. There'll be a couple of interesting decisions because there'll be a few nations eyeing him up and wanting him, and two in particular. I think England may or may not, depend on what Eddie does, whether Eddie wins a World Cup and all the rest of it. I think England will want Gatland after 2023.
How could he not?
And New Zealand potentially. Now, New Zealand wouldn't, if they continue the philosophy they've been using recently. They've been promoting from within with obviously Henry, Hansen, Fozzie.
He's got them working on his breakdancing. That's all I'm going to
know. Well,
have a dance off between him and Robinson.
That decision will all depend on how New Zealand do. If New Zealand win the next World Cup, it will validate their decision, historic decision, to promote from within. And so they will just keep doing the same thing. And basically for New Zealand, anything other than winning a World Cup is a failure.
Yeah.
If they fail to win a World Cup, that's when they might put out the call for Gatland to come in.
So two things which I think are going to be difficult for Gatland, in the new cycle, is England themselves have a cycle, which is, they're currently having a foreign coach, and I think there's going to be a clamour for an English coach next, because that's just the politics of it. I don't think they'll immediately go to Gatland unless there is no outstanding candidate. So I think someone like Baxter would have to turn it down, Diamond would have to turn it down, there'll be a couple of others. But Sanderson, I think, is going to be...
One day.
Yeah.
So that'll be the first one. And the second one is New Zealand. I think the plan here is to get Gatland back into New Zealand rugby through the...
To the Chiefs.
Through the Chiefs. Now, if he continues to fail as miserably as he previously has done, it's going to be a very hard argument to make, isn't it?
Whatever, he's beating the world champions at the minute. And we're going
to...
And
you don't need to tell me that. You need to tell New Zealand rugby that.
Yeah, well, prediction for next week. How do you think it's going to go? I think the Lions kill them off. I think they make a few changes, and I think they end it.
I think South Africa win it.
I think South Africa are going to win it. I think it will be one of those arm wrestle games, and I think if things went South Africa's way in the first half and didn't go their way in the second half, and I think a few more things over the course of the game will go. Just the ball will bounce right, the angles, those fine margins will land on South Africa's
side. And also,
side.
I want a third test. I'm on a stag doing Liverpool for that weekend. And it's all predicated on this third test being quite good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
By the way, can I just say, talking about a stag do, how good is it just to, like, a bit of normality? I stood at a bar.
I chatted
to a barman. I could see all of his face.
I went out on Thursday night. I was like, I'm not missing the first week of freedom. I'm going to go out on Thursday night on my own. I went out on my own in Manchester.
where did you go?
Revs to Cuba. I went to
nice.
Something called Blues Lounge, which is very, very nice. Went to get myself a martini. went everywhere, mate. Went everywhere. Phenomenal night out.
Love yeah. it. I mean, people might infer some sort of the pause between saying where you went as, you know. There's some places of ill repute, but we'll leave that.
Who knows?
But it sounds like this was the place to be last night as well.
It most certainly was.
Friday night and last night. And Friday night was awesome. So we were at the bar over there. Guy Ritchie's bar, no less.
What?
Yeah. Guy Ritchie has a travelling bar. Ritchie's.
So
we're at Guy Ritchie's bar.
Real?
And we were at...
Hold on. Like,
hang on, is that true?
Director, former husband of Madonna.
Yes.
Guy Ritchie.
Had a bar at North Dorset Sevens.
Love that.
And... Next door to Guy Ritchie's bar was Jake Peledri's bar
yeah.
with his Just Pressed Cider. So we were enjoying their fine produce. And I'm not a big cider man, but if I'm in the Southwest, I'll have a few ciders.
But we're all big Jake Peledri men.
Jake Peledri is a big Jake Peledri man.
Yeah,
he is an enormous unit. But he's a very nice chap, having a good chat with him. But then it was like about 9 o'clock, it was like calming down a little bit. And we thought it was... is going to wind down, and we're like, okay, maybe some options to go for a drink somewhere else. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like a few hundred people came from who'd been preloading at the campsite, came out, and it was great dancing in the rain on Friday night.
Yeah, so
tops off.
When we, yeah, tops off, of course. we had a few beers, and as we had a few more beers, inevitably, the conversation started talking about bar fights. Josh had a bar fight once, didn't Josh, our power in the sevens, which is always fun. And in front of Jake Peledri, I said, Jake, have you ever been beaten up? No, never. I was like, never? No, never. Right, okay, well, we'll leave it there.
Yeah. Take some team of men to want to try and beat Jake Peledri.
I seem to remember the Springboks, all 15 of them struggling to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think I'm... only disappointed I wasn't part of it Friday night or Saturday.
Do you think this is like the thing, though? This is like the tradition. We'll go and play and we'll send you away somewhere. And then you can join us
if
next
I'm
day.
Being sent away to hang out with...
exactly.
Your mate, Greg.
International legends. That's absolutely fine with me.
International legends, aren't we?
But I think we should say, because you can see everyone's packing up after a cracking weekend, well done to North Dorset Rugby Club. Absolutely phenomenal.
Amazing. And everyone, the 64 teams who showed up played some good rugby. It was awesome to be a part of.
Tell me this, you've got some kinky YouTube searches. Is a needle up the dick a good thing or a bad thing?
Phil told me about this. So tell me if I'm wrong, because I'll try and give the short version of this story. There was a team that were upset that the Egg Chasers social
one,
team...
One guy. The rest
one
of the team
guy. One
yeah,
guy,
the rest of the team
guy,
were all brilliant.
Absolute legends.
One guy from an opposing team was upset that the Egg Chasers social team were too good.
No, he was upset that we started without him.
I think it was a bit of both.
So basically, like, you were all legitimately old enough to be classed as vets.
Well, hang on. Our team was... Their team wasn't.
Well, yeah, yeah.
yeah.
And so our 14... team was legitimate. It's just we can't help it if, you know, the people that listen to Egg Chasers and heed our call are fine, strapping men who look after
to
themselves.
To a man.
100%.
Yeah.
Can't help that. No, not going to apologise for it. But his insult was...
That was about...
What did he say? What was the needle
it's
up?
It's social rugby. You should have waited for me. Now, bearing in mind, waited for him, I don't know if he thought it was going to make a difference because they had 14 men against our 10.
They finished with about 18 players on the field.
And three of them were in their
20s. What was the needle?
Yes, he said, yeah, you should have waited for us. But when I played that was about as enjoyable as a needle up the dick.
Like, oh, that makes sense then.
Well, is it enjoyable? So you enjoyed it?
No. So he was saying...
He said it was about as enjoyable as a needle up the dick.
Yeah, so that's it wasn't enjoyable.
Yeah, but like, so why does he want the extra 10 minutes to play against us?
I'm sure there's some logic in there somewhere. On that bombshell...
Yeah. Yes.
On that bombshell, the guys here at North Dorset Rugby Club need to pack up and we all need to get home and you guys need to go and rehydrate.
Yeah, five-hour drive.
Get yourselves on a saline drip before your journey back to Manchester.
Or during it.
Yes. Yes, please.
Nice one. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Sweet.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.